Good afternoon, everyone. My research is on soil testing and plant analysis relationships for irrigated chili production. Here are the objectives: to evaluate the soil and nutrient testing procedures for irrigated chili production, to establish basic testing guidelines with respect to yield potentials, develop basic baseline test values for grower use, and to identify potential critical values for use in further research. Here's a gratuitous picture of the chili pepper for you. So within the chili pepper species, there's about 50 to 75 different pod types known. Of course, those all range in Scoville units on heat and have other distinguishing characteristics. The New Mexico pod type was what my research was specific to. There's over 35 different varieties of the New Mexico pod type chilies with a wide range of varietal characteristics. It's a perennial, although it's commonly grown as an annual in production systems. So there's a huge global market for chili peppers grown all over the world. It's used both in its fresh form and in dried form and in things such as salsas. The United States market is centered around California, New Mexico, and Arizona. And the yield in 2008 was worth over $120 million, so it's an important crop. So not only are chilies tasty, but they're good for you, so you should eat up. They're high in vitamin C. They're actually one of the highest known vegetable crops, sources of vitamin C for your diet, and they're also high in vitamins B1, 2, and 3, and vitamin E. So with respect to fertilizer inputs in agriculture and why we're concerned with them, of course, they're known to be a limiting environmental input with respect to key nutrients. And also, traditionally, fertilizer was cheap, and so the negative consequences of over-fertilization weren't really adequately addressed. Also, since their livelihoods depend on it, farmers, of course, tend to err on the side of caution with respect to fertilization and the yield. I think we all would if we were in their situation. So with a valid correlation between nutrient test values and yield, farmers can seek to maintain optimal yields with minimum inputs. So with the soil and tissue tests that I had, I analyzed for a full range of nutrients, but then the research that I'm presenting here has narrowed the focus to those that you see listed. So this was conducted in 2008 and 2009 on growers' fields in New Mexico and Arizona. We had five fields in each state in 2008 and three each in 2009, broken down so that we have a total of 80 plots and 80 data points to look at. All fields were managed by the growers with inputs on an as-needed basis, accomplished in accordance with current guidelines. Each plot was 12 meters by 12 meters, so 144 meters squared. The planting dates ranged from 18 March to 28 April. And at planting, we took composite soil samples from each plot and had them analyzed. Here's just an example of a typical farm layout. And then here's how a typical field might be broken down into individual plots. So after planting, we monitored all the plots for plant development, and we based that both on field observations and the heat unit after planting model, which I'll go over in a moment. And we took samples corresponding to the four physiological stages of growth: first bloom, early bloom, and peak maturity. So for the heat unit after planting model, we based the data on the Arizona Meteorological Network, or AZMET, for the Arizona fields. And with the New Mexico fields, we got temperature and climate data from a cooperator out there. We used the 13 degrees C temperature thresholds for our heat units. This is a heat unit model developed by the University of Arizona specifically to irrigated chili production. The black dots, if you will, are the heat unit after planting model. And then the red dots are a selection of fields so you can see how we corresponded to that model. Just an overview of the heat unit concept. So basically, you have temperature on the y-axis and time of days on the x-axis, and you're integrating with respect to daily temperature to find accumulated heat units. So at sampling for each stage of growth, we collected 60 to 75 leaf blades and petioles from the uppermost, most recently matured foliage. We hand washed those samples and dried them at 110°C, separated and ground the leaves and petioles, and had the analysis conducted by a separate laboratory. At harvest, within each plot, we took 3 1-meter-squared samples and then dried the harvest from those samples. Then we averaged those results and extrapolated them to calculate dry yield on a per-field basis. For the data analysis, we use the Kayton-Nelson method, which involves drawing two lines on your data set. You can see dry yield on the y-axis and nutrient value on the x-axis, such that you maximize the data points in the lower left and upper right quadrants and minimize the data points within the other two quadrants. So we were successful in obtaining ranges for Chile for nutrients of interest and established basic testing guidelines, as well as identifying potential critical values for use in further research. For each stage of growth in the soil test results, I'll present the data with means, standard deviation, CV, and range for each nutrient. Here you can see that we were showing a wide CV across our results, which indicates that we have a good deal of heterogeneity within our results, so it's a good data set with which to base, upon which to base results for the growers. Also, there's some discussion within the results on the potassium results. So we see a wide range from 110 to 1900 parts per million for the potassium. And this is mostly due to the difference in soil types between Arizona and New Mexico. For the New Mexico soil types, we're seeing much more gravelly, rocky soils, and the Arizona soils are dominated by clay. And then I'll show you for soil test results and each nutrient stage of growth compared with current published guidelines, our results. So you can see them there. One thing that will be a trend throughout the experiment is high levels of boron, which we'll talk about more as we go through. Also here you can see I've published or presented both the ammonium acetate extractions for K and the water-soluble extraction. The water-soluble extraction for K is currently what's presented in the guidelines. However, we feel that the ammonium acetate is a much more solid basis with which to base your soil testing regime, and so that's what we've published for a potential critical point. This is an example of using the Caton-Nelson method on the data set with dry yield plotted against phosphorus parts per million. And then here you can see the soil boron also plotted against dry yield. And you see these data points on the upper right, which are probably indicating a decline in yield with these very high levels of soil test borons. Here's the leaf blade test results for first bloom, presented with those same statistics as for the soil tests. And then against current published guidelines. A couple things to note here where we differed from the guidelines. Very high levels of iron. However, we did not see any toxicity effects either in the field or decrease in yield associated with those. Also, very low levels of zinc. I don't know where my bubble went, but it's gone. So you can see here these are much lower than the published values for zinc. So we're interested in that. For early bloom, the same set of statistics. And then compared to current guidelines, you can see that we have high levels of iron, same as before, with no noted toxicities effects, and very low levels of zinc. Here we're seeing an increase in our leaf blade boron, which this trend continues throughout the sampling regime to quite high levels of boron with noted possible toxicity effects and decreases in yield at those very high levels of boron. As a point of note, we know where the boron's coming from. One of the growers is potentially addicted to boron, and he likes to sneak it out whenever he can. He's a great cooperator. We really like working with him, and he actually hasn't seen these results yet, so I'm sure this will change his boron habit, we hope. And here's the same set of statistics for peak bloom. And here you can see this levels of boron are increasing even higher, and as you can see here, they're well above the published values for boron. And then here you can see, once again, we have quite a significant decrease in yield at these higher levels of boron. These are leaf blade test results for peak maturity, and I'm not going to compare them to current guidelines. The guidelines really are published for earlier stages of growth and not peak maturity. Here again, though, you do see that very high level of boron that we're seeing throughout the study. These are petiole test results. We had the petioles analyzed for nitrate N and phosphate P, and there's the statistics and for phosphate. And then a brief breakdown of how they correspond to current guidelines with potential critical points there for phosphorus noted as 0.12% at first bloom and 0.1% at early bloom. So in conclusion, we did successfully establish baseline references for soil and nutrient test values for irrigated chili production, as well as identifying several possible critical points for use in further experimentation to validate those. And we feel these results will provide a better step towards, better nutrient management efficiency in irrigated chili production. Questions?
Probably have a series, but I don't want to monopolize the discussion.
That's,
I missed the extractants that you use for iron, zinc, and boron.
For soil or for?
For soil.
For soil, DTPA for iron and zinc, and then hot water soluble boron.
And then in general terms, I want to ask about the NPK and the S. Nitrogen management, typical rates, and how often do they apply?
There was fertilizer at the beginning of the study, they applied 75 to 100 pounds of 1152O. And then throughout the study, it was about an every 10-day application. And I'd have to check on the rates. I don't know those off the top of my head.
Drip irrigation or
the fields in Arizona are using irrigation systems, not drip, regular irrigation systems. And then the New Mexico fields are using drip irrigation. So we got to see both systems. Yeah.
And we're chuckling back here because significant yield loss, that's a penalty. With irrigation, can he flush that out?
Well, he's applying that as a foliar applicant through the irrigation system. On a continual basis. And in fact, sometimes he's almost apologetic for it when you go out there, I put some more boron on. He really thinks, you know, in the New Mexico state guidelines, they mention in one spot that boron possibly might interact with calcium for blossom end rot issues. And I think he really thinks that he can up his calcium levels by upping his boron levels. But then you see that the end result is a strong suggestion that there's a decrease in yield as a result. No, he's Arizona.
Arizona?
Yeah.
I could perhaps see that in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
More questions?
Did you take into account any of the irrigated water nutrients in the irrigated waters?
So we had the water samples tested to eliminate that as a variable. And really the only thing you see that could affect anything with the water samples would be some salinity in the water in New Mexico. And they deal with salinity problems out there in their fields. It's a constant management issue. But besides that, there was no real interactions.
Nothing for boron in the irrigation?
No, nothing. We obviously specifically checked for that.
Was there a critical period of time where you would use petioles versus blades as far as the
I think that I would say no. I think the main difference between petioles and blades is you would want to look at, or it's more commonly known to look at phosphate and nitrate in the petioles because they're more mobile nutrients versus the blades. So currently farmers are sampling both.
Any other question? Okay, thank you very much.